Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. A friend of mine has a wife who is dying of cancer. While she was undergoing cancer surgery, she suffered a severe stroke. It's a tragedy on many levels. Not only is her life impaired by the ravages of chemotherapy, but the stroke has partially paralyzed her and made it difficult for her to communicate. But the greatest tragedy of all is that her husband can find no one who will provide her with the therapies she needs. My friend is a professional engineer and has been a close student of medical innovations and life extension therapies for many decades. He knows more than many physicians do about the latest life-saving techniques. He knew that his wife needed hyperbaric oxygen therapy and needed it fast after her stroke. He knew that vitamin C infusion therapy had no bad side effects, unlike Big Pharma's drugs, and very promising results in studies involving patients with the same kind of cancer as his wife. And he had medical power of attorney, and so he should have been in complete charge of the treatments given to his beloved one. But he could get none of the treatments he wanted for her, not at the hospital where she was staying, not at any of the hospitals in his state. And in her condition, long-distance travel was not an option. Not only could he not get the treatments he knew she needed or could benefit from, but she was given drugs and treatments against his express wishes, some of them with terrible side effects and a very bad track record for results. Then, to top it all off, the doctors, at least one of the leading figures being a Jew, conspired to rend asunder the trust between man and wife and get her, while in a very confused state of mind, to reject her husband's help and advice and nullify her medical power of attorney. A neat trick which rendered my friend helpless while the medical establishment packed her off to a hospice after selling her a lot of inappropriate drugs at absurdly high cartel prices. I am sure that some of you know the reason this happened. The reason the government regulators, the medical establishment, the insurance companies, and Big Pharma have such a hammerlock on what therapies we're allowed to have is because we quote-unquote have to be protected from quack doctors and quack cures. Once the government and the megacorporations and the lawyers get hold of those powers, of course, money and corruption come into play, and there's a lot more going on than just protecting the gullible. But the reason I brought up this tragic example of our lack of medical freedom is to show you how much we're losing by catering, always catering to and basing decisions on the needs of the lowest, stupidest, and least capable among us. Because some people are incapable of making intelligent decisions about their health care and would gladly fork over their life savings to snake oil salesmen, all of us must have our decisions made for us by bureaucrats, legislators, and insurance executives, and none of us have freedom to choose our own treatment anymore, even in matters of life and death. We are bound by chains, even the best and most well-informed among us, basically because stupid people need chains to keep them from killing themselves. Innovation is stifled. New ideas take decades to get to the people who need them, many of whom don't live that long as a result. Brilliant minds, who can't stand red tape and bureaucracy, leave or never enter the field. Now, probably, at this stage of our evolution, we need some kind of regulation to keep wicked liars from becoming millionaires by telling the rubes that they can cure cancer with holy water or the like. I'm not arguing that we don't. What I am arguing is that the lives and liberty of the best among us, those who would never fall for the snake oil salesman, would be greatly enhanced if we could operate under a different set of rules. And I am arguing that we have too many rubes. And I am especially arguing that our stage of evolution isn't high enough. Imagine if we were more evolved. Imagine if everyone in our society were as intelligent and well-informed and of as good character as my engineer friend. What a different world it would be. There are many other areas in our society where the best among us are held in chains because of the presence of the inferior, including inferior races. Look at education. Because we've accepted the false notions that we're all equal and that everyone is entitled to a college education, we've dumbed down admission requirements to the point where huge numbers of university freshmen have to take remedial courses in reading and basic mathematics. Our high schools, afraid to fail blacks and mestizos or be accused of discrimination and losing their federal funding, graduate increasingly ignorant and even illiterate students. It's been shown that many of today's university seniors have difficulty passing high school tests from 50 or 75 years ago. And in such an environment, what happens to the best students? They languish. They are bored. They're ignored and never receive the attention and encouragement that they need. This is increasingly true as the current equalitarian policymakers gut programs for gifted and advanced students. And huge numbers of today's teachers are themselves products of a dumbed-down, affirmative-action education system. What could they possibly offer our best young minds? Less than nothing. Is it any surprise that so many of our best young people end up alienated, antisocial, and self-destructive? Now imagine a world in which the very best and greatest teachers you ever had in high school and college were the norm. Imagine a world in which all the students were at least what we would call gifted now. Imagine a world without blacks and mestizos in our schools and everything that that implies. Imagine every class able to teach the most advanced concepts at a pace suitable for our best young minds. And imagine every graduate having truly mastered the body of knowledge that currently exists in every basic field and standing ready to add to that body of knowledge instead of struggling to pronounce words of more than two syllables and unable to give the answer to 4 equals 2 plus X. Now look at the insane number of laws that have proliferated in our society. America has gone from a bastion of freedom and liberty, in which a man was free to speak or act in any way as long as he didn't harm the race, the nation, or his neighbors, to the most oppressively overregulated society this side of Hoxha's Albania. You can't turn around without bumping into some law or regulation you have to obey. Consider just one of our larger law libraries in this sad country, consisting of several huge rooms, crowded with shelves, and with the shelves stuffed full of books, floor to ceiling, each of which contains hundreds or thousands of pages of tiny type. I ask you, is it possible in 100 lifetimes to even read all of the laws we are supposed to obey? Be honest. That's crazy. It's insane. I doubt that there is any one man who has even read, much less carefully considered and understood, all of the tax laws alone in this country. Yet the regime can send you to prison for breaking them, and ignorance of the law is no excuse. It's been estimated that each of us unwittingly commits 3 felonies a day. Laws as many as these have to be selectively enforced, or they cannot be enforced at all. So having so many laws gives the lie to the old claim that America is a nation of laws, not of men. That phrase means that you cannot be prosecuted because a rich man or an official doesn't like you. But boy, oh boy, that certainly is not true today. When anyone, upon investigation, can be found to have broken several obscure laws this week alone, then anyone the oligarchs or officials don't like can be put in chains whenever they so choose. And the plain fact of the matter is that the excuse for most of these laws is that people can't be trusted to do right. They do stupid things. They do immoral things. They must be watched. They must do everything they are told to do. And they must not do anything they are not told to do. It's easy to get the mob to clamor for protection. When you live in a society consisting of people of high character and high intelligence, however, far fewer laws are needed. You are freed from so many dangers. Therefore, you can be freed of so many chains. The answer, as I said before, is better people, more highly evolved people. And the science of ensuring that each generation is better than the one that preceded it, the only way to the better world I've been talking about, is called eugenics. It means of good birth. The basic problems are the presence of alien and less evolved races in our society, and the fact that under current social conditions, the worst specimens of our own race tend on average to have the most children, and the best tend to have the fewest. The society the National Alliance intends to build would be racially based, like any healthy society, and so the other races would have their own societies and would not be present in our living space. And we would have a positive, healthy, and nature-based eugenics program to ensure that each succeeding generation would be of higher evolutionary grade, of higher racial quality than the one before. Far from being evil, eugenics is actually the most beneficial and humane discipline ever devised by the mind of man. In fact, eugenics is the only viable long-term solution to all our social problems. As I said on this program in 1993, eugenics is the only way to a better world. Science has shown us that genetic structure is by far the greatest determinant of intelligence, character, and behavior. Unfortunately, those with the best genetic inheritance tend to have the fewest children, and those with the lowest intelligence, lowest potential, and worst character tend to have the most children. This leads to a genetic deterioration of the race that gets worse with each passing generation. No amount of education, no laws, and no increase in the power of the police or of the state can counter this degeneration. Eugenics is simply the idea that we should humanely use our social policies to encourage as much as possible the birth of children with good genetic qualities, and to discourage as much as possible the birth of children with poor genetic qualities. Some of this could be done with the more advanced techniques of modern reproductive science, such as allowing surrogate mothers to carry genius-level children in large numbers, or encouraging the voluntary use of egg banks and sperm banks to propagate the best children that our race can possibly produce. But most eugenics would be simple and basic and just good common sense. We should not be subsidizing the birth of ever more 70 IQ underclass gangbangers through welfare payments to crack whore mothers and the like. We white Americans must build a white society. So, unlike today, none of the births in our living space will be of future Crips and Bloods. And even among our own race, the welfare system and the tax system should be reorganized to discourage, in every possible way, the birth of those with poor genetic inheritance. This could be done by linking the perennial underclass's benefits and mitigation of criminal sentencing to sterilization or emigration. And there could be endless variations on the theme of tax deductions, tax credits, and interest-free loans extended to families of good genetic inheritance to encourage them to give the priceless gift of their children, most of whom will grow up into highly evolved, creative problem solvers, to our society. How can that be evil? It's not evil. It's really the ultimate good. After a few generations of eugenics, after a few generations of 10 times the number of problem solvers and culture creators being born, and a tenth of the number of problem makers and culture destroyers being born, we would have a very different nation indeed, and a very different world, an infinitely better world. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the reconstituted National Alliance membership organization, founded by William Luther Pierce in 1970. This program is published every week at whitebiocentrism.com and nationalvanguard.org. Please write to us at National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. We welcome your support, your inquiries, and your help in spreading our message of hope to our people. Once again, that address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you of the words of Richard Berkeley Cotton. Freedom is not free. Free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
Love. For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout.